welcome to our first She Says Zoom event in Munich. I would like to welcome and introduce Tatjana Krajcic.
Hi there.
Welcome. So Tatjana is native Serbian who grew up bilingual, traveled the world, made an amazing career, worked in Frankfurt and Singapore. And now she is based in Munich, and she is senior project manager at Have a Design. Maybe some of you know this company. And also she's part of Creative Mornings, where she is the sponsorship manager. So Tatjana, thank you very much for being here. Thank you for kicking off our first Zoom event, which is very special and also strange, surrounded by circumstances, as you know. But we're very happy to have you.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm really excited to be here today, and to hello to everyone out there who has dialed in.
So, Tatjana, what is diversity? What are your thoughts on this topic?
Well, talking diversity, I think when we talk about diversity, it refers on the one hand on the fact of human life. And that means that we are all different kinds of people, right? And we not only differ in culture, in gender, in ethnic and race and sexual orientation, but also the different cultures that we have, the different beliefs and values. But we also have different experiences that we just simply make in life. And also we differ through thoughts and opinions. So when we talk about, on the one hand, on diversity, it refers to the different kinds of people. But on the other hand, it refers also on the idea that it drives cultural, economic, social vitality and innovation. And I'm sure we've heard it all along the way that diversity yields in better business results, it can improve the bottom line of a company. And simply for the fact of being exposed to a diverse team can potentially change the way we think. Because we are being exposed to this large pool of knowledge, skill set, experiences, thoughts, whatever it is. And that stimulates us not only to think in a more creative way and approach things in a more creative way, but also we are encouraged to search for novel information and perspectives. And that can lead to innovations. Tapping on, for instance, latest McKinsey reports, which states that cultural and ethnic diverse teams outperform non-diverse teams by 36%. And teams where men and women are equal earn 48% more revenue. And I sometimes wonder when I hear these numbers and when I hear all about this theory and the knowledge that we have collected, how much are we actually putting into practice of that? And what do we need to do to move from talking into doing? And where is a good starting point? What's a good base, actually?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, these are actually crazy percentage numbers if you hear it like that, right? It makes a huge difference.
Absolutely.
So, what do you think would be a good effort? Like, what would be the groundwork that an organization has put to make this possible?
Well, I think first and foremost, the question for an organization is not if and whether they should invest into diversity, but rather they should think about in what way can we actually move the needle. I think we can say when we look at the world that the face of the world is changing. And what I mean by that, if you look at UN statistic latest ones, which state that there are 270 million international migrants, and that number refers to, if you put that into context, that's half the population of Europe. And that number has risen in the past 10 years by 50 million. But narrowing it down, looking at Germany, for instance, like Germany has over 80 million people living here. And 20 million of these people have migrant background. And migrant background means that they are either migrants or at least one of their parents is not German citizen. And it's not only cultural diversity or language diversity or ethnical diversity, but if you look at it from a corporate perspective, we sometimes, when we, in our corporate world, we sometimes work with potentially four generations. I mean, the baby boomers, we have the generation X, Y, and Z. And each one of these groups has different motivations to coming to work. They have different communication styles. They have different preferences. And they also have different tools that they use for communications. And I think we can say that diversity is the new normal. And I was thinking about, what do we need? What base do we need to consider to have good grounds to start on if we want to have diversity flourish in all its perspectives? And I think one important thing is that we need to have in place is to create a safe space. And what I mean by that is that if we have a psychologically safe space, people will contribute with their ideas, as weird and as quirky as they are. They will express contrarian views. But if we have a space that is rather led by fear, it is just normal for us humans, because when we feel threatened, we will move into a safe space, whether this is an emotional threat or a physical threat. So we'll surround ourselves with people that make us feel safe, but it will also shape the decisions that we make. Because if we fear that we might be considered as different, that we fear of not belonging, that we fear of potentially losing our job, or we fear of making a mistake, people won't be contributing with their ideas. And fear exists in many ways. There's also that I come along a fear, which is the fearful love. And the fearful of love is if we don't want to express something because we don't want to hurt someone's feelings. Oh, I didn't want to say it because, you know, I didn't want to hurt your feelings. But, and I see it so many times in the daily business that when talking to people, or for instance, we're doing debriefing sessions and we're sitting all together, everybody is encouraged to contribute and share their thoughts and opinions that they bring along the process. And that somebody written that we learn to communicate this. And if you feel that you potentially might tap into this rather offensive mode, you can also use two words in front of the sentence. You can say, for me, during the process, I was missing certain information and I would have wished that we would have just caught up more often. So you're not tapping into this, I'm right, you're wrong mode. And I think we need to find ways where we, first of all, have policies and guidelines in place, because we need to, this is something that we can teach people and we need to moderate through these processes. I had once this beautiful experience where I was attending a session with a vocal coach trainer. So he came in, recorded our voices, and then in the entire group, he invited us to give feedback on each voice. And before he started, he said, you need to follow these guidelines because the voice is something very personal of a person. It's like as if you're talking about somebody else's parents. I mean, it's just a minefield that you're just entering. So he said, you need to be respectful. You need to make sure you're not tapping into this rude demeanor. And he said, if it's conscious or unconsciously, I will snap you out of that and I will tell you to rephrase it. So he moderated us through that process and we had the set of guidelines, and everybody, every time when somebody crossed the line, he intervened. And I think if we want to have diversity have flourish at all levels, we need to create actually these conditions, and we need to make sure that everybody feels comfortable in expressing their opinion, because it's important. And there's nothing worse if you're in a room full of people as diverse as they want to be, and everybody is just agreeing on everything. And Winston Churchill said it so beautifully. He said, if you have two people agreeing on everything, one of them is unnecessary. And so if you're potentially sitting on a pool of talents, make sure that you bring them to shine, and then this will boost your company and will bring your company eventually to shine.
This is a very relatable story, I think, to everyone. If you hear this, it's so important to have a safe space, right? To be totally able to find, and it's a, yeah, like fresh air that enables you to. And yeah, But if we talk about diversity, I think it's also important to talk about inclusion.
Yeah.
What is inclusion?
I mean, I think we can say that diversity is reality, but inclusion is a choice. So yes, certainly management and HR, they need to own the purpose. And if they install these processes of diversity and inclusion, they need to make sure that everyone is on board and everyone is considered in their plans. So this needs to be treated as a business plan. You need to set clear goals. You need to review, need to adjust. You need to talk to your employees. And you shouldn't put a full stop behind it. You shouldn't put it there. It needs to be adjusted along the way. And what I mean that you need to consider everyone, because so many times when I speak to people here in Germany about diversity, the first thing that they think about is gender diversity. But it's not everything gender diversity. And if you're just focusing as a company, just putting women into leadership position, and you're just taking that into consideration, what about the rest? You need to value everyone for their difference, and you need to consider them and make sure they feel valued in that space. And you need to have everyone on board to have these incentives work. And the other thing is, with all of these incentives, is we look at it most of the time, we think like, yeah, that's the management thing. They need to tell us what we need to do. We have a share in this. And we need to make sure that, we don't need to make sure, but I would recommend that everyone reviews their own appearance and ask themselves, what am I contributing? What am I doing if somebody, for instance, starts within the company? And it's the simple things that you can contribute with. You can go in and greet somebody proactively. You can introduce yourself. You can ask the person who's just started, do you want to go for lunch? Ask the person about the story. Because if you're not consciously including, you're unconsciously excluding someone. And I think it's important that we review our appearance and that we look into how we include. And the other thing is that when I speak to people about, you know, most of the times we look at things and we go into snap judgments because we are wearing our lenses, and the lens is called the cultural lens. And we all have a culture. When I speak to people about culture, they say like, yeah, that's from a person of another country. We all have culture. Because we have been taught and raised in a particular way, the way we look at the world. And to give you an example on how on cultural lenses, if you, for instance, come from a family where everyone is loud, and when you sit at a dining table, everyone is loud and talking above one another, and not necessarily waiting until somebody finishes the sentence. And if you bring to such a family a person that is rather soft-voiced and, you know, very politely always waiting for somebody to finish, there might be the case that once that silent person leaves the room, they will be, why did you bring her? She's really boring. Or she didn't talk to us that much. Doesn't she like us? And that's bias. So we not only think that our perspective is right, but we also move into a space that is righteous. We think just our view is right on the world, and the others are weird and imbecile and awkward. And that implies that we need to review how quickly we go into these judgments. But also, I've always heard about when I grew up and that about the golden rule, treat others the way you want to be treated, right? But maybe there is another rule that we need to apply these days, and that's a so-called platinum rule. And the platinum rule means treat others the way they want to be treated. And that not only implies that we need to take off our cultural lenses, we also need to ask questions, we need to be curious, and we will potentially get uncomfortable. And when talking about biases, when I looked into cases about what is happening in the corporate world,
the German Institute for the Future of Work tested prejudice in HR with a sample of 1,500 job applications. There were two groups of applicants. The first group were Germans with a German name. The second group were also Germans, but with a foreign sounding name.
Everything else was the same. They were born and raised in Germany. German was their mother tongue. They did school here. They did university here, everything. And they figured out that the people with a foreign sounding name had a much harder time landing in the pile for being invited to a job interview. They had to apply much more. When I grew up and I have migrant background, my parents are from Serbia. I was born and raised in Germany. Now I do have German citizenship, but a couple of years back I didn't. And I have a foreign sounding name. And somebody told me when I started to enter workforce, they said to me, if you make a spelling mistake in your email, in your letter, in your application, the recipient might, I wouldn't say he will, but he might assume maybe her German isn't good. Maybe she doesn't know better. And that could be of disadvantage to me. And I was aware of that. To give you another example in terms of bias in the corporate world, in the 1970s, the top five orchestras in the US had less than 5% women. In the late 1970s and early 1980s, they introduced blind auditions. Not for the sake of getting more women on board, they just wanted to make sure that the conductors don't choose their favorite students. So everyone who was applying was behind the curtain.
And through these blind auditions, where the candidates were actually situated behind the screen to play for a jury that couldn't see them, researchers have determined that this step alone made it 50% more likely that women will advance to the finals, even when this method was only being used in the preliminary round. They've also introduced carpets. So they lay out carpets so the shoes won't give an indication whether this is a male or a female participant. So we're all being tasked to closely monitor our own appearances, to be aware of what cultural lenses we are wearing, and to review how we are driven by our own biases. Because we're all contributing to the case, and we all account for our own cultural lens. And in order to make environments more inclusive, we're all being tasked to contribute with small actions. Because these small actions will lead to greater actions and make environments inclusive.
So it comes out, so what can we do, like, consciously to raise the bar of diversity and inclusion?
Yeah, absolutely. I think one of the key factors that we need to consider is, I mean, we really need to practice listening and learning. And especially if you put something like some of these incentives in place, you need to make sure that you are in constant communication with your team. And as I said before, you need to treat this as a business case and constantly get feedback and also understand each one of these groups and the what they actually need. If you put incentives in place, they don't work for them, or they're being overrated by whether gender, race, or LGBTQ communities. You need to be in constant exchange. And then I think what's also important, we need to understand the different cultures. If you want to manage a global team, not only need you to understand how you perceive international cultures, but you also need to understand how these international cultures perceive one another.
Do you feel that companies...
When I talk to people and ask them, like, have you ever experienced in the corporate world kind of rudeness or disrespectful behavior? And I'm sure many of us have. I have. And Christine Porat has done some research on that. She's a professor and she's the author of Mastering Civility. And what she figured out, that people who are directly affected by rude or disrespect, and she figured out that people who simply witness it, that the performance decrease is also significant. People, the performance decreases by 25% who simply witness it. And they're 45% less likely to contribute ideas. And I think that these numbers are just alarming. And I think we need to be aware of our own appearance. And these uncivil behaviors, they can be reflected, for instance, if somebody is not greeting someone in the hallway, if somebody is, I don't know, constantly coming late to meetings, but or somebody is texting while you're speaking to them. And what it also does, uncivil behavior, it chips away people's attention. Not only that they're thinking about the case most of the time when they're at work, but it's also been, she's tested it with two groups. She looked into, she had two groups. The first group was given a set of words. And in this set of words, there were rude triggering words like in obnoxious, bother, interrupt, and she sneaked these words in and she asked them to make sentences. In the second group, she didn't have any of these rude triggering words. The first group, they figured out that they were 5 times more likely to misinformation. And they made more mistakes. And when we think about going back to corporate world and how this does affect people, in some areas, it depends on life and death. For instance, for doctors. And there has been a case reported to her where a supervising doctor was scolding and treating really badly other doctors and nurses. That group of doctors and nurses, they went on, they treated a patient. And even though the right information on the right medication was just on the chart, somehow all of them missed it. And the patient died eventually. So uncivil behavior does chip away people's attention and performance. And as a business owner, you need to be aware how your appearance is because you are leading. And you also need to make sure that if you tolerate such a behavior, if you tolerate that somebody is walking past someone not greeting because they're just so busy or they just don't like the person or they're just always constantly late to meetings or something, or they just use a rude set of words, you need to be aware that this will be reflected in your business performance. And yeah, I mean, just, you know, and when you think about also who is the driver of innovation and ideas, people are. This is a people business. So you need to make sure that civil behavior is the norm.
Makes sense. Yeah. Then I was a bit too eager to ask my question. So
yes,
coming back to it, do you feel that companies are doing a real effort to change? And do you maybe have any examples, positive examples on how it can look?
Let me put it this way. I think we yet need to do a lot of work. And I think if I speak to companies and they tell me like, yes, we're really interested in having diversity in our team, in our management team. And then I look over to their management team and it's just one race, one nationality, one sexual orientation, one gender. And I'm like, okay, I don't see diversity there. So what's the incentive that you have in place? And if they don't have any incentive, then I'm like, okay, maybe you have good intentions, but you need to put it into action. Otherwise, it's just good intentions that you have. I spoke to a friend of mine when I was about good examples in diversity and inclusion. And when I mentioned that to her, Paula said to me, oh, you need to talk to my husband. He's working for this company and they have beautiful diversity and incentives, diversity and inclusion incentives in place. She sent me the link and they have mapped that out on their website. But I wanted to dig a little bit deeper and I wanted to get an understanding what they actually do and how this is perceived. So I was lucky to speak with two of their employees, Victor and Katarina, and it's the company ThoughtWorks. So what they do when people start within the company, so the first thing what they ask is, how shall we address you? They ask people when they start. And secondly, they get a lot of trainings. They work with a nonprofit organization that is focusing on anti-discrimination policies, and they get practical trainings on discovering their own bias, what kind of biases exist, on inclusion trainings. And what they also do, they have constant communications. So they have a so-called diversity and inclusion council call that takes regularly place. In this call, they have representative for each of the cases. May this be related to race, gender, culture, LGBTQ. And everyone from the company is asked, they are free to join the call and contribute. And then these representatives need to take the feedback in, report it back to the management, and then report back. But the communication is just ongoing. It's just a constant there. And I was asking, like, great, this is beautiful and incentive, and you have this ongoing communication, but what is happening to the people who simply are too shy to speak up in such a large group of people on the phone, or even if in a video conference? And they said, we have people representatives. These people representatives are voted in this position for, and they hold the position for 1 year. And everybody can approach them, and if even if they ask, they want to keep this private and confidential, that is fine. And the beautiful thing is, for these people representatives, this is not an extra job they're taking on. Instead, it's part of their job. So there's being set time aside, particular for this role. So it's not representing an extra burden that you have on top. And I think what they also beautifully do is when they have a new client, they have a new project, and if somebody has any concern with regards to the client, they can state it openly. And I've asked them, like, did you ever reject? And they said, yeah, we rejected. And I was like, weren't you afraid? Like, wouldn't this be of any consequence? And they said, no, it's fine. I mean, you just shouldn't reject every client that comes in, but if you have any moral concerns with regards to the client, you can reject it and it's fine. And I think what they also take into consideration at that point is not putting somebody on this job who is not super passionate, but it rather might be counterproductive for that. And I think, yeah, I can just recommend everyone to look into their case. I think they're just doing a beautiful job in that respect.
That sounds like these are fundamental values that maybe should be even taught earlier, not only at companies. So do you think
totally.
We create something like this in schools, or how would this work? What are your thoughts about this? Like,
well, I think the way how we are generally conditioned, like we are conditioned to be competitive, we are this I win culture. And I think I looked at the case and I'm fascinated how they do it in Denmark, because in Denmark, in schools, what they do, on the one hand, the teacher sits together with each of the students individually at the beginning of the year and they map out goals. And they look into also a lot into collaborative work. So what that means, if somebody is particularly good in biology, for instance, that person is being placed with another person who's less good in that subject. And what it does, it helps the people, the pupils who know the subject well, not only to memorize it better, but they also develop empathy skills because they have to put themselves in the shoes of others. They need to understand how to transfer their knowledge and how this is being perceived. Beyond this, they have since 1993 so-called empathy classes in place. And these empathy classes, where everyone needs to take part in, they're compulsory. They're taking place once a week for 1 hour. The class and the teacher sit together and they discuss everything, if whether it's related to a problem that they have in school, whether it's a problem related outside of school. They sit together and they focus on re-listening and understanding each other, and they try to find collectively a solution. And in case they don't have any problems, which is great, which is the ideal, right? They just enjoy being together. And in Denmark, they call it hygge. I don't know if anyone have heard about it, but hygge is creating a cozy atmosphere and enjoying the company of each other. And hygge means that you create a space, you can light up candles. That's what Danish people do a lot. They have a lot of candles every day on, and then it's essential that you be in the present moment. So if you come into the hygge space, you're not supposed to bring your phone. Children are not supposed to bring their toys with them. So when we play together. And there's no drama allowed, no bragging, no harsh topics on politics, anything that is controversial. Everything is of that is being left out. And they just enjoy being together. And they call it the so-called intentionally created intimacy. And in this world, what happens in this intentionally created intimacy, a so-called neurohormone, which is called oxytocin, starts flowing. And we know oxytocin is the so-called love hormone, it's a cuddle hormone. So if you give somebody a really intense hug, or if you're close to somebody physically, that's where this hormone starts flowing. And with hygge activities, people are being placed in a safe place, because what this oxytocin does, it reduces stress, it makes people happy, and it reduces pain. And they move emotionally into that space where they feel safe, and they just practice of being together and having a good time. Okay, we moved from diversity to neurohormones, and you might be asking yourself, okay, what does this have to do actually with diversity, and why are we talking hormones? Because I think once we have a different state of mind, once we move into a zone where we're happier and where we practice togetherness and good company, we not only bring good energy to the table, but we are more understanding of others. We are more receptive, we are more inclusive. And what also happiness does, it makes us more creative and more productive, certainly. And I mean, there must be some reasoning behind it that Denmark is being voted as one of the happiest places to live since 40 years. And I think we all want to have that kind of happiness in our lives as well. And, you know, maybe hygge is a way to start this, to move into that place. And you can practice it with your family. You can practice it with your friends. You can practice this at work. And, you know, but it's just like with everything in life, or most of the things in life, it is a choice you're making. We can talk about diversity, we need to talk about diversity, but we also need to take real action. And we need to get the basics right. And that means that we need to practice finding a common language, need to practice togetherness, need to practice good gatherings. And once we get that right, diversity can flourish and everybody can come to shine. And I think diversity is not only enriching for us, it's boosting companies. And I guess it's a decision. I mean, we can continue tiptoeing around it, or we can fully embrace it and make a change for the better and leave a positive and good legacy behind for our children, I believe.
That's very beautiful. Thank you. Thank you so much.
Well, thank you so much.
Anyone has questions or would like to discuss this topic with Tatiana, we will make a post on our She Says Facebook page where you can comment and continue this, I would say, very important conversation on empathy and acceptance, diversity and inclusion. Tatiana will be very happy to answer your questions or talk further about this topic. And I would just like to say thank you so much for this wonderful first Zoom event. Thank you. It was such an important current topic, which is, I think, in many, many hearts, and everyone, like a lot of people live through it. And we should all definitely be more conscious and just
show aware.
Everyone around us.
Wow. Well, I have to say a big thank you to you guys. Big thank you to She Says for offering me this opportunity and for inviting me for the conversation. And I would also like to thank very much Velvet Co-working Space. A big thank you to Lara for hosting me tonight. And to everyone who's tuned in, thank you for being here with us. And thank you for your presence. I wish we would have met in person, but as the situation is like this, I'm happy that we have this channel that we can communicate. So thanks, everyone, and have a good evening.
Thank you. Thank you, everyone. Stay tuned for our next events. Thank you so much, everyone. Have a great evening.